Good evening, everyone. Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy
altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Bliss. Amen. It's lovely to be here this evening. We recently had a visit from Swami Mangalananda. He's a disciple of Anande Moy Ma. He lives in India full-time now. He's a Westerner who has adopted India as his country, and he's working at a school there for the poor children who otherwise wouldn't be able to have an education. He wrote this book about Ma, and this is entitled Ma's Message. Ma's message can be encapsulated in one short statement. This body tells of one sovereign remedy for all ills, God. Trust in Him, depend on Him, accept whatever happens as His dispensation. Regard what you do as His service. Keep satsang, that is, association with saints. Think of God with every breath and live in His presence. Leave all your burdens in His hands and He will see to everything. There will be no more problems. Ma's teachings in her own words. All this, which is His creation, under His dispensation, in His presence, and is verily He Himself. In whatever state He keeps anyone at any time, it is all for the good, for verily everything is ordained by Him, and is of Him. Relative happiness, which is happiness depending on anything, must end in grief. It is man's duty to meditate on God, who is peace itself, without having recourse to that which aids the remembrance of God. There can be no peace. Have you not seen what life in this world is? The one to be loved is God. In Him is everything. Him you must try to find. To a human being, the most noble, irreproachable line of conduct should be alone acceptable. It is a matter of great rejoicing if anyone strives to mold his life upon this pattern. Only actions that kindle man's divine nature are worthy of the name of action. All the rest are non-action, a waste of energy. Any line of behavior that fails to quicken the divine in man should be eschewed, no matter how enticing it might appear. But any that help to awaken man's inherent divinity must be resolutely adopted, even though it is seemingly uninviting. Man's calling is to aspire to the realization of truth, to tread the excellent path that leads to immortality. What appears delightful to the senses later develops into a hotbed of poison, generating inner turmoil and disaster, for it belongs to the realm of death. Ma could be fierce. From Paramahansa Yogananda, this comes from Inner Culture magazine, from Mother's Library. This is from April, May, June of 1944. nervousness, cause, and cure. Nervousness is a malady which can be overcome by a specific medicine, namely calmness. The disturbance of mental equilibrium, which results in nervous disorders, is caused by continuous states of excitement or excessive stimulation of the senses. Indulgence in constant thoughts of fear, anger, melancholy, remorse, envy, sorrow, hatred, discontent or worry, and lack of the necessities for normal and happy living, such as the right food, proper exercise, fresh air, sunshine, agreeable work, and a purpose in life, are the causes of nervous diseases. Any violent or persistent mental, emotional, or physical excitement causes a disturbance of the balance in the flow of life force throughout the sensory motor mechanism and the bulbs of the senses. It is as though we put a 2,000-volt current through a 50-watt lamp. The lamp wires would be burned out. In the same way, the nervous system cannot withstand the assault of intense, destructive thoughts and feelings. Nervousness appears to many as a simple problem, but it is a deadly enemy with far-reaching results. It is difficult to heal a man of any disease so long as he suffers from nervousness. The unbalanced life force in the body makes it a tremendous task for him to concentrate or meditate deeply enough to acquire peace and wisdom. Nevertheless, nervousness can be easily cured by anyone who is willing to analyze his condition and remove the disintegrating emotions which are tearing him apart day by day. Analysis and calmness in all situations of life will heal the most stubborn case. Realization that all power to think, speak, feel, and act comes from God, and that He is ever with us, inspiring us, guiding us, brings us an instant freedom from nervousness. I'll read that again because it's so tremendous. Realization that all power to think, feel, and act comes from God, and that He is ever with us, inspiring us and guiding us, brings us an instant freedom from nervousness. Flashes of divine joy will come with this realization. Sometimes a deep illumination will pervade the being, banishing the very conception of fear. The power of God sweeps in like an ocean, surging through the heart as a cleansing flood, removing all obstacles from our path. The delusion of matter, the consciousness of being only a mortal body, is overcome by the contacting the sweet serenity of spirit, attainable by daily meditation. The victim of nervousness must understand his case and must reflect on those continual mistakes of thinking which are responsible for his maladjustment to life. When the nervous man once admits to himself that his disease is not mysterious in a cause, but the logical outcome of his own habits, he is already half cured. The nervous system is the telephonic outlet and inlet of the body, providing man with his response to outer and inner stimuli. Excitement dislocates the nervous balance, sending too much energy to some parts and depriving others to their normal share. This lack of proper distribution of nerve force is the sole cause of nervousness. Now that's something to think about. When we have thoughts that are disharmonious, not attuned to the divine consciousness, then it sends too much life energy to some parts of the body and not enough to other parts of the body. We can see this in digestive disorders, where the heart has palpitations, where there is a tremendous sense of tension in one part of the body, wearing out the rest of the body. And so we see that this direction of life force, which in yogic terminology is called prana, the intelligent life force that pervades your body, and the mind directs it, and through our mental focus, we put our attention on one thing more than another. So our stomach becomes upset, our heart begins to beat more irregularly or more wildly. We feel tremendous tension in some parts of our body, our back goes out, and so on. These are all results of the way that we're thinking and how our thinking then directs the life force that's inside of us. The calm man, one who avoids excitement because he is not overly attached to his ego and is aware that God, and not he, is running the universe, is always able to meet any situation in life because his nerve force is equilibrated. This is the goal we must strive for and attain. The nervous system supplies life current to the brain, heart, and other parts of the body. It distributes energy to the five senses of sight, sound, touch, taste, and feeling. Now, it's really something when you begin to think about it. How is it that we have a life in this body? If you take a dead man, for instance, and you put bread into his mouth and you try to pump his lungs artificially, you will not produce a state of life. The life that we have has been deeply investigated by these yogic masters. And what they discovered is that there is a subtle force that pervades the body when we are living. And in fact, that subtle force, or prana, life energy, pervades everything that is. And those things that manifest what we call life have it manifested through a kind of a nervous system. In plants, it is much less developed. In humans, it has reached its highest development. And that life energy is what is responsible for our being able to do anything at all, to think, to breathe, to move, to act in this world. And so when we really acknowledge that and see that, we see that we are made up of a much more subtle force than we would ever have thought of before, and that it's an incredibly powerful force. It not only influences our own body, but it reaches out and it touches the people who are around us. It explains why if somebody walks into a room, and depending on their condition, they influence the people who are around them. If somebody is very angry when they come in, and they come into a room where anybody is sensitive to that, they feel it, even if the other person is trying to act in a normal kind of way. They feel the anger. If they are extremely morose or depressed, you feel that too. It feels like a heavy blanket is being laid on top of you. And you feel that energy stretching out from the other person, even though they may be laughing, they may be trying to join in with everybody else. Nevertheless, there is that vibration that goes out from that individual. In the same way, if somebody has that perennial calmness, if they have a great deal of love, that goes out as well, and we instantly feel it if we are sensitive to it. Now, we have to get out of the way. We have to be attuned to what other people are bringing with them. If we're preoccupied with what our own state is, we won't sense it. We won't feel it. But if we feel inwardly a sense of calm, we open ourselves to this intuition that will tell us what another person is thinking, what they're feeling, and what their intentions are. And it's a great, great asset to have in this world. But we must have a calm mind in order to do this. So this life energy is a wonderful, wonderful thing, but it makes us responsible. Responsible for everything that we think, everything that we say, everything that we do. It's a very interesting thing when you meet somebody, is to reach out with your intuition, calm and quiet your brain, and feel for what that person is bringing to you in that interaction. And there will be a great deal revealed, more than in their words, more than in what they are presenting themselves as. You will see the truth of their being. In the astral worlds that exist in a more subtle plane beyond this physical world, that is the primary way that by which people know each other, is through the vibrational aura that they put out around them and through thought transference. And so there's not the misunderstanding that's created through words. There is much less that can be hidden. And everything is revealed Jesus once said that what you think you do in privacy is really, eventually, shouted through from the rooftops. Because in divine spirit, everything becomes known. Everything becomes known. And there cannot be anything done that we think is secret, that is hidden, that is put away, that shall not be known, because all of our history is written and it is can be read by anybody who has the sensitivity to see it. It's a very interesting thing in the way that God has me work. And sometimes, as I'm speaking with somebody, suddenly their face changes. And I see there the face, not that they have today, but the face that they've had in previous incarnations. And along with seeing that face comes a great deal of information. It comes to me because in order to help that individual free themselves from their past, it's oftentimes related to things that they've done at previous lifetimes. And sometimes it will be one mask after another that peels away and reveals another as go further and further back into the history of the individual. Now, this is not anything I ever do with a prying kind of mind. It's something that comes to me spontaneously when I'm working with somebody and that they have given me essentially permission to do this. And so when you see somebody's long history like that, you see that there is a very carefully coordinated law of cause and effect. And that soul, even as they may not have much memory of what happened in the first years of life on this earthly plane, they may not have memories or direct memories of things they've done previously. But we can oftentimes have a sense of it. And we can know it by those tendencies that we bring with us. There is something called samskaras. Samskaras are those tendencies that you bring in with you that are buried deep within your subconscious mind. And they bear very significantly upon the kind of personality that you disclose to this world and that you become. Now, these are only the accumulated habits of many lifetimes. They're not really you in the essential sense, but they're the things that you have carried with you from time to time. And what we come to learn is that until we have resolved all of these patterns from all of these different lifetimes, we cannot really come into a state of peace. And peace, that deep abiding peace, is really what all souls yearn for. Now, peace is not a dead zone. Sometimes you see on headstones, may he rest in peace, as if that's the end of life. And that's not the case at all. Peace is dynamic. Peace is filled with life energy and with intelligence, far beyond anything that the puny little human intelligence can manufacture. Contained within that peace is the pure state of being. And in that pure state of being resides everything that we see manifest around us and much more. If you can imagine a great dam that's holding back a lot of water, and then there is a spillway that goes down through the dam and feeds into a river system that goes out towards the ocean. All the activity, all the noise, all the power of that spillway and then turned into the river and the rapids and other falls as it goes down and down and down towards the ocean. All of that is the visible life. All that river, all that spillway is all the visible life that we see around us. But contained within that huge reservoir behind the dam is all that potential energy stored up. And it is the huge energy of God unmanifest. And yet, everything that manifests within the river is stored within that lake. But you look upon the surface of the lake, it's absolutely placid. It's calm. It's deep. And so it is with us. Deep residing within our own beings is that pure self. And that self is calm. It is deep. It is peaceful. And then from that deep sense of being flows out the intelligence of divine consciousness. And that is the architect of this universe. That is the Christ who is the carpenter that has gone into building this universe. Now, that's not an individual only who lived 2,000 years ago. It is a universal consciousness. And it manifests out from that original Sat. And this is in India called Chit, is this conscious awareness. And as that moves out, that goes out into activity. And that is Ananda, or what in the Christian scriptures are called the Holy Spirit. And this is the activity God. It is the blissful, joyful activity. And in its virginal state, in its original state, it is all joyful. It is all wonderful. It is all remarkable. And it is only when it manifests in limited forms, such as the human being, does it get distorted into something that is different. So we must remember this, that that divine calm, the peace that is of spirit, exists deep within you. And it is the thing that we yearn for. The pure intelligence, the positive intelligence of that divine spirit can be constantly manifesting through you. Now, Mother described herself as having a direct pipeline to God. That intelligence flowed to her naturally. And you recognize the difference between that intelligence and your own. And it is the difference between night and day. Because your own intelligence operates so much in the dark. But that divine intelligence comes with a great illumination, like a thousand suns all bursting forth at the same time, only they do not burn you, and they do not burn you out if you are prepared for them. And so you open yourself to this tremendous intelligence. Now, you cannot really perceive it until you have been properly prepared for it. And this is for your own safety. This is for your own good. But you can still the mind. You can become quiet inside. And you can get glimmers. You can get rays. You can get illuminations along the way. And all of this helps to prepare you so that you can take this tremendous realization when it comes to you of who and what you truly are in the divine spirit. This is a wonderful, wonderful creation. Far more than what we could ever imagine it to be, truly. But we get back to Master's reading about nerves are our medium of contact with the outer world and the source of all of our sensory reactions. Your afferent and efferent nerves, they are taking in information, and again, they are acting on the muscular system, and it is how we move in this world. How important it is, therefore, to keep the nerves in a state of perfect balance, not shocking one part of the body with too much energy, and consequently limiting the supply to other regions. Not by restlessness or emotional reactions, but by calmness, by deep trust in God, we reach the yogic state of an equilibrated being. The yogis have special techniques by which one can revive the tissues burned out by nervousness, by sending life energy into the nerves partially destroyed by mistreatment. He's referring here to Master's energization exercises. Each cell and tissue in the nervous system is a living, intelligent structure. Life energy can always renew it. Nervousness is of two kinds, psychological and mechanical, or superficial and organic. The psychological, or the most common variety, is due to the mind excitement. This condition, long continued in and accompanied by wrong diet and association with uninspiring people, causes the chronic or organic manifestations of nervous disease. So if we develop a chronic condition of always thinking nervously, and that is without any real faith or trust that God is the one who is orchestrating events in this world, and thereby finding the calm and the peace that comes with that, then we will eventually get the body infected with it. Now the body is becoming in a chronic condition of nervousness as well as the mind. Choice of company is all important. Tell me what kind of friends a man has, and I will tell you what he is. Flatterers do not help us. We should seek the society of superior men, those who tell us the truth and help us to improve ourselves. He is our best friend, who humbly suggests how we may benefit our life by worthwhile changes. Brutal, harsh criticism is like hitting a man on the head with a hammer. The power of love is infinitely more effective. The gentle voice of suggestion can accomplish wonders, whereas crude fault-finding does not reach the desired goal. Only a perfected man should undertake to fully judge another. The effort spent in judging oneself is the only profitable analysis. Association with calm, wise people is one of the quickest ways to banish nervousness and realize our innate divinity. When a criminal is put in the company of other criminals, he receives no benefits. On the eve of his departure from prison, the warden, out of his experience, thinks, "When will he be back?" Nervous people should stay away from those suffering from similar troubles. Too much sleep drugs the nerves, and too little sleep is hurtful to them. The diet should be simple, balanced, and not too plentiful. But the best cure of nervousness is cultivation of calmness. One who is naturally calm does not lose his sense of reason, justice, or humor under any circumstances. He can always separate sentiment or wishful thinking from fact. He is not led astray by irreproachable screams of unexpected wealth or by the honeyed tongues of dishonest men. He does not poison his bodily tissues with anger or fear, which adversely affect circulation. It is a well-proven fact that the milk of an angry mother can seriously poison her child. What more striking proof can we ask for that violent emotions will finally reduce the body to an ignominious wreck? Poise is a beautiful thing. We should steer our life by a triangular guide. Calmness and sweetness are the two sides, and base is happiness. One day, one should remind himself, "I am the Prince of Peace, sitting on the throne of poise. I am the Prince of Peace, sitting on the throne of poise. I am the Prince of Peace, sitting on the throne of poise." Whether one acts quickly or slowly, in solitude or the busy marts of men, his center should be peaceful, poised. Christ has given us the ideal. Everywhere he demonstrated peace. He passed through every conceivable test without losing his poise. The body is like a little bubble of energy in the cosmic sea. God is everywhere, controlling planets, galaxies, yet he is not disturbed. Though he is above this world, he is yet in this world. We must reflect his image and likeness. We must meditate often and hold on to the peaceful after effects. Now this is important because when we sit down to meditate, we sit down for a while and we'll feel some peace. But immediately we will get up and we'll begin to think about our day and all the things we have to do. And we lose this effect of the peace. The after effect is the peace that you feel and the tranquility, the equipoise within yourself. When you get up from your meditation, seek to carry that sense of peace, that sense of calm, as far into the day as you can. Constantly remind yourself that you are the Prince of Peace and that you sit on the throne of poise. And then as you enter into this life, into this world, into your day, you bring with you that poise, you bring with you that peace. And then watch how much better your reasoning mind does, how much more positive your thoughts are. Observe then how your intuitive mind is more active and more available to your conscious mind. See how much you can do in terms of doing less and yet accomplishing more. Because you do the right things. You pay attention to the correct things. You're not spending a lot of busy time doing things that don't produce results. Because you have that peace, you have that poise, and it's always with you. It's always with you if you choose it. So we must reflect His image and likeness. We must meditate often and hold on to the peaceful after effects. We must send our thoughts of love, goodwill, harmony in the temple of meditation with the light of intuition burning on the altar. There is no restlessness, no nervous striving or searching. Man is truly home at last in the sanctuary not made with hands. And so this is really a tremendous message, and one that oftentimes when we're steeped in a habit of restlessness, we find difficult to enact. But think of the cost to you of always being in a state of nervousness, always being a state of anxiety, not finding that poise within you, not finding that peace within you. It may be difficult when you cultivated a habit of nervousness for a very long time. But what tremendous rewards we reap when we make the effort. But it has to be firm. It has to be determined. It has to be consistent. It can't be when we're exasperated and we're finally fed up and worn out and we burned ourselves out in nervousness and anxiety about everything in this world. And then we cry out to God, please save me from this. When it is we ourselves who have created it. Now, it doesn't mean we live in a never-never land, not ever paying attention to the things we have to do. Of course, we must pay attention, but we do it from that calm center with the equipoise. We make a firm determination in our minds. I'm not going to give way to nervousness. I'm not going to give way to this lack of poise. The cost is too high. Too high. And when we willingly and even joyfully turn ourselves over to that practice, we let go of those things that do not serve us well. And we cling on to the things that do serve us well. And eventually, through practice after practice, it becomes our new way of being in this world. Now we are constantly calm. We meet the situations not retracting and recoiling from them, but expanding out the very light that is fed to us. And we grow into our problems instead of shrinking away from them. It is a wonderful life, and it's meant to be wonderful. It's meant to be joyful. How far we get away from that. And it doesn't mean that we ignore the problems of life, but we joyfully take them on. Okay, here's something that's being given to me, and I haven't sought it out, but here it is. Now, like a great puzzle, how do I figure this out? And I assume that the answer is there, and that it can come through my intuitive mind. And so I look at all life this way, from that inner poise and that inner calm, and I trust and know that the answers are available to me and that they are there. Now, God gave me a wonderful thing this morning in meditation. And He said, ego mind tries to possess things. Spiritual mind manifests things. Ego mind tries to possess things. Spiritual mind manifest things. You manifest them, and you manifest what you need from moment to moment. And you trust in that, and you know in that. It doesn't mean you sit around on your hands and wait for things to come to you. You look to be the instrument that you, in your ego self and in your body, are the glove, and God is the hand within the glove. And it is God who moves through you and manifests through you. And the more that you can attune yourself to that, the more powerfully you know that to be true. At first, you don't know that presence of God so completely and fully that you know how to trust in it. And so you do the best you can according to the highest light that you know in that moment. You live according to the highest principles that you know. But as you practice this inner state of calmness, eventually you begin to feel this presence, and it becomes a very real thing in your life. And you know the difference between your own mind and God's mind. And gradually that divine presence begins to manifest through you. And then you are all about manifesting, all about how things flow through you. And you are not at all concerned about what you possess, because from moment to moment, whatever is needed is given to you. The moment I walk out of my house, that house ceases to exist for me. I walk into this home here down in Ashland, and this house is what exists for me. I feel now this is my home. And fortunately, Peter has to make the mortgage payments on it. But I feel this is my home. This is my family. And wherever I am, I feel this way. And the entire world is my friend. And I meet friends, I meet beloved ones everywhere. Some of them I know well, some of them I'm meeting for the first time. And it is because I am unafraid. I am unafraid of the stranger. Because there are no strangers. I am unafraid of my friends. I am unafraid of my family. Because I know who I am. And that knowledge does not leave me. And so I'm not threatened by anybody else. No one can take that away from me unless I give them the power to do so. And I do not. I do not. That I retain with myself, because my first and foremost allegiance is to God. And if all the rest of the world should disagree with me, I would not give. Because it is God alone who is my boss. I have one boss in this world. There have been times when other people have disagreed with decisions that I've made. Sometimes they've been angry with me. Sometimes they've gone away. That's their choice. That's their test. Mine is to check in and make sure that divine consciousness alone is what is ruling me. If it's something less, then I need to be honest with myself and with others. But when it is God who is guiding me, that is my first and foremost boss in this world. And I respect the opinions of others, but they come in a distant second to that one divine intelligence and consciousness. How do I know that it is God? Through long practice, through cultivating a calm mind, and through distinguishing between what is my own personal thoughts and what is the divine consciousness. Now, this doesn't happen in a day, but you can set your feet upon that path. And you can make great, great progress until finally your little mind merges into the divine mind. It is no small thing. It is the greatest thing we can set our sights upon. And when you do, you will feel such a change in your life that you will feel that you have been changed and will never again be the same. This is the most exciting, the most wonderful, the most beautiful journey an individual can embark upon. It is not relegated to one religion or one group of people or one individual, but it is the inheritance and the common lot of all mankind for any who would pick up their lives and follow in the feet of the great masters. And so, whether you call God, God, Rama, Jehovah, Krishna, Buddha, Mohammed, Allah, it makes no difference. What makes the difference is the heart. And when the heart loves and is soft and is kind and is serviceful, then they are all worshiping the one same God. And it is beautiful and it is wonderful. Wanted to read you something that God had given to me, and I think it's beautiful. The key to prosperity is to use what you have been endowed with well. Do not think of becoming less. Rather, think of living well with what you have and being a conduit of supply that will meet and exceed your creative vision. Enjoy the fruits of all you have created and find joy in all that you do. Do this, and you will have prosperity flowing from every cell of your being. And that's the truth. It is the truth. Now, because we are traveling and we don't get down here as often as we like, I'd just like to open it up to any questions that anybody may have about anything that I spoke about or about their own spiritual sadhana, their practice. Now's your chance.
Talked a lot about nervousness, and it seems like if you're nervous, it's probably a good road sign that you're not in the right spot. You know, it would seem like it would be hard to be tuned in with God and be nervous at the same time.
The two are antithetical, aren't they?
Yeah.
And you can feel the nervousness in your body. It's interesting how Master points out you direct too much life force into one part of your body and not enough into some other. So how do we know that we're nervous? We feel tense. What is it that's creating tension? We're tensing certain muscles in our shoulders and our neck. We feel our heart beating too fast or too rapidly or irregularly. We feel our stomach churning and watery, and we're sending too much energy to these areas. And by virtue of the balance, then, we're robbing other areas. And it wears us out. We feel absolutely depleted at the end of the day if we've had nervousness all through the day. If we could imagine in our powerful minds how having an absolutely calm mind all through the day, where you meet every situation with a sense of calmness, a sense of inner assuredness, and then how you would feel at the end of the day. And as you do that mental experiment, what do you notice about how you would imagine you'd feel at the end of the day?
Oh, it'd be tremendous. For one thing, you wouldn't be as tired out.
Yes.
You'd probably have plenty of reserve to keep on going into the night. And also, you tend to, when you're in that state, mm-hmm. that relaxed, equal state, you tend to do things right the first time with a lot of calmness, mm-hmm. and you don't make mistakes where you have to go back and redo it. You're not fumbling and dropping.
Right. It's another very good clue that we're operating in a state of nervousness. We're bumping into things, we're dropping things, we're being clumsy. Mm-hmm. We're not connected with our body and with the activity that we're doing. And so we bring the mind back. It's off. It's trying to anticipate what the problems are, how to solve them. It has nothing to do with what we're doing in the moment.
Right.
And so that's the other quality of calmness, is it's very focused in the here and now. It's not preoccupied with the future and with the past. That's something that the nervous mind does.
You know, David, what comes to mind my mind is something we talked about just recently today about the children in India.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd kind of mentioned how a couple times you kept bringing up how calm they
mm-hmm.
were, and if they didn't maybe have the kinds of things that do make you nervous to keep you from being calm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things out there, whether they be electronic or whatever the case may be, so just better holding their attention because they're calm to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And good lesson for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and what occurred to me while they're in India is that, of course, because they don't have all the things that our children have, they don't have television in the home, many of them. They don't have the little games and the little electronic games and all this kind of thing. And I started thinking about that constant assault on the senses through the eyes, through the ears, and rapid fire, bang, 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 lots of flashing, changing kind of things, and it's engaging to the mind. But it creates a constant need for stimulation. And when the stimulation is gone, the mind is still racing. It's still firing all those neuron patterns inside the brain. And suddenly, I'm bored. I need to do something here. I can't just sit here. And what I saw in India at the ashram, for instance, and most of these were average children, is that they sat there and children from 3 years old to 13 years old sat there completely awake, eyes open, looking around. Nothing tremendous going on here. Completely present to the moment. And I was amazed at how still and how quiet they were with it. And entertained. Nobody curling up, and they wouldn't be allowed for one thing. Nobody curling up and going to sleep in the corner. And nobody, you know, rolling their eyes and saying, I'm bored after 2 minutes of sitting there. It is a very marked contrast. And so I think it was this last year I saw yet again another study that talked about television and its influence and how those children have higher rates that are exposed to television early on, higher rates of hyperactivity and attention deficit disorder, how our whole society is getting geared around this, and how much it doesn't work for them.
Yeah, I don't think it's just kids. I think it's adults, too.
Sure.
I mean, I've noticed it in myself, you know, needing stimulation, and you're scared that if you don't get stimulation, you'll slip right into...
If things get quiet, oh my gosh, that's threatening somehow. And yet once you get past that initial nervous reaction to things getting quiet, you feel yourself dropping down into that. And it's extremely pleasurable. And you realize how ramped up you were before that. And how good it feels to let things get quiet. Now, if you hear that same kind of noise and stimulation, it feels invasive. It doesn't soothe you or feel so good then. It can kind of ruin you to some of the other things that we're used to for entertainments. Yeah. So this is a huge topic for our age and for the kinds of things that we're living with.
All the
time.
Lots of coffee, lots of cell phones ringing.
It's a question of balance, of course. It's not all sedate, kind of offline kind of living, but it's having that balance and to learn to get quiet inside and get still inside, to become prayerful inside and recharge our batteries, that we're not overstimulating one part of our body with too much life energy. We rebalance them. We feel balanced, we feel alert, we feel awake, but calm. Then learn to take that out into the world of activity and remain in that balanced, calm state. It's a wonderful practice to cultivate. And it's not always that we can do it all the time in the beginning. But eventually, with practice, we can be in the midst of all kinds of activity and have that inner state of calm, and make better decisions, be more open to our intuition, not wear ourselves out, not burn ourselves out, because we're directing too much life force into particular parts of the body. So we're healthier then. And you enjoy what you're doing instead of, you know, feeling resentful and hurt and angry about it.
That over energy creates a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, I'm late, I gotta get this done, you know, then kinda.
Right. I remember one time driving the car in Seattle and I got caught into a traffic jam. Big surprise there. And I felt myself start to, oh man, you know. And I thought to myself, well, I have to take up space someplace. This isn't too bad. I got a fairly comfortable seat here, and I'm moving along, and traffic is slow, but, you know, it's okay. I have to take up space someplace. And something in my mind let go. And I quit overstimulating parts of my body with an imbalance of energy. And I recovered that balance, and it felt so much better. Didn't change the traffic for better or for worse. But my experience of getting through it changed completely. And you think how much people get wound up into road rage and anxiety and fear and all the different things that takes us over. It's really huge. It's really huge. So to be a prince of peace on the throne of poise. To be a prince of peace on the throne of poise. We can make that our mantra. Okay. Let's close with Master's poem here, and then if we can have a song, a chant, if you lead us, Carla. This is entitled Eternity. Oh, will that day arrive when I shall ceaselessly ask and drive infinite questions into thine ear, O eternity, and have solution. How weak weeds grow and stand unbent, unshaken beneath the trampling currents, while the storm wrecks titanic things, uproots the trees, and quick disturbs the mighty seas. How the first spark blinked, and the first tree, the first goldfish, the first bluebird so free, and the first crooning baby, in this wonder house made their visit and entry. They come, I see, their growth alone I watch, thy cosmic molding hand, that secret works on sea and land. I wish to seize, O eternity. And so on the shores of eternity, we see this parenthesis of this creation, where things are created, come into fruition, and then are dissolved. And if we can see ourselves in that dance of life of eternity, easily creating, and then easily allowing to dissolve when the time has come. And to be thankful for each day, for each moment, for each opportunity to create. To have that thankfulness inside of us, and yet no attachment. As the creation comes, is preserved for a while, and then dissolves. But we live in an eternity of joy, of a pure sense of being. Isn't that something to strive after and to attain? Please pray after me in the closing prayer. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence,
of thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence,
my mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I
and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
I bow to the light within you. May God and the Masters ever bless you and keep you, fill you with that divine calm and light and peace, and make you ever know that you are one with the Divine Presence.